Welcome to the Toffee Blues, your source for all things Everton. That was different and new. Saying it different, not saying Toffee Blue View like I did before. It's I'll get used to it one day. This is Jerry coming to you, recorded and not live, from North Carolina in the States. With me today, I've got Terrence Terry. Yeah, whatever you want to call him, Terold. Yeah, he's good. Tertiary. Yeah, that works. Terry, good to talk to you, man. Glad you're back.
Thanks, man. Good to speak to you.
Yeah, so we almost didn't make it. There's been all number of nonsense that has happened to keep us from recording this this whole session. It's been frustrating. We've had Windows laptop updates that have lasted hours. We've had power outages in downtown Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Everything you can think of has held this back. What did you say about this particular pod, Terry? It was God, about the universe or something?
Yeah, the whole universe is trying to stop this pod from happening. So if it does go out, it's the pod that defied God.
The pod that defied God. I think that should possibly just be the tagline for this all the time. The pod that defied God. So yeah, we're definitely glad to be here though. I have no intro planned.
We never plan them. They're always spontaneous and never thought of.
It's always just natural human interaction, isn't it? I don't even know where to go at this point, Terry. Where should I go? Just gave me an idea for a lightning round question. John, edit all this out. In fact, never play this again. What is it? What's a good topic? Because I don't want it to be anything that we're discussing later.
VAR?
Nope. Discussing it later.
I don't know.
You know what I mean? I'm puzzled. I had like a few topics beforehand, and I've got nothing else. We gotta hurry too. I really don't know where to go on this. Should it be football related, or should we talk about Everton at all, or about anything in the league at all? Besides, VAR is the hot topic, but that's the middle bit.
Yeah, talk about Lampard at Chelsea, something like that. I don't know. Just sprang to mind. Nah, bit crap that, isn't it? It's like it's another team specifically on an Everton podcast now. It's a stupid idea.
Yeah. This is ridiculous. John, I'm sorry you're having to listen to this. I'm almost thinking we should just start this over. Let's see here.
I went to see the new Tarantino film.
Okay. All right, John, delete all of that. Got it? Have you done it? Great. All right, so Terry, give me a good topic to discuss. It's good to launch the show with, and we'll go from there.
I mean, we could stick to form and discuss.
I was gonna say that was my cue for you to talk about the new Tarantino film.
Oh no, I was okay.
Oh, is that what you were doing?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I was trying to pretend it was spontaneous, and I had him.
John, this is a hot mess, and it's usually my fault. All right, so start this over. Just totally. I don't know. John, cut all that part out. So Terry, what has been going on with you? What have you done over the past couple of days? Give me the highlight.
Yeah, I've had a good weekend. It's a little anniversary with the wife. Ironically, not my wedding anniversary. That's in a week and a half at the time as a recording. But the overall anniversary of when we got together, so it'd been 10 years.
So you have a dating anniversary too?
Not normally. It's just because it was 10 years this weekend.
Yeah.
Next year we won't have a Dayton one, because we would do, but the Wedden one is 2 weeks after the Dayton one. So if there was a little bit more space between them, we may do, but we haven't. Just the Wedden one, and because it was a 10 years one, we've been together 10 years for the Dayton one. We went with that, but went to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the new Quentin Tarantino film.
And let me guess, you hated it.
You know what? It's strange. it's one of those weird things where I don't really know what I think yet. So obviously, I'm not going to spoil it.
See, I was joking. I was being so sarcastic. So I figured it was awesome. I've heard good things.
No, I'm not for 1 second suggesting it's not good. It is good, but I don't know whether it's amazing or whether it's just okay. I can't sort of get a bead on it. You know, where you feel like you need to watch it again. So I will say that it's worth going to see. It's definitely, I would not discourage anyone from seeing it if you like Tarantino. The acting in it is really good. You can just see, you can see from the poster that it's going to be, you know, just, you know, loads of schlubby fun. Just from the, based on who's in it. And it has got some very, you know, funny moments that you'll really appreciate. So, I just want to see it again, because it does that Tarantino thing where it subverts your expectations. You think it's going to do one thing and it does something else. And then you think, well, I know what it's going to do now, because last time it did what I wasn't expecting. And then it does a third thing and you didn't expect that either. So you can't catch, the film catches you out no matter what you do. You never see coming what's going to happen. It is good. I just need to see it again to get a proper bead on it to know whether I love it or whether it's just okay. I don't know. A little bit.
Do you like that feeling, like not knowing, like being feeling a little conflicted? Because some people really like that. You know what I mean?
No, not especially. I mean, I like to think something's amazing on first viewing, but I don't you know, hold it against the film or anything like that, where it may, you know, it's a bit of a thinker. This one isn't a thinker per se, where it's, you know, it's got deep messages or anything like that. It's just, I found The Hateful Eight was like this. It's not like The Hateful Eight. I came out of The Hateful Eight thinking it wasn't very good. And when I've seen it subsequent times, it's gone up from dislike to it's okay. Which, from a usually, you know, exemplary, amazing director, is still below his, you know, his par. For me anyway, personally. But this one is sort of like, I think it's good. I think it's a 6.5 to 7 out of 10. But will I see it again? It'll go up to a 9. You know, I'm a bit like that. It's a real strange one, because it's such an unorthodox film that, you know, the way it's structured. I'm trying so hard not to give anything away, but
it's all right.
It's not like Django Unchained or Inglourious Bastards or anything like that, where it's very much a Tarantino film, but it's a coherent thread of story. This one's very much choppy and moves around, and, you know, some characters you think are going to do one thing and they end up going another way, and so on. It's a thinker. It's a strange one.
Can you compare it to another one of his movies?
Not really.
Okay. That's cool.
Can I? It's more like The Hateful Eight than any of the others, but it's better than The Hateful Eight, I think. It's not as dragged out as The Hateful Eight, and it's got a much stronger ending, whereas that was my problem with The Hateful Eight, that it sort of peaks at like the 80% stage and then carries on for another, you know, like another half an hour of film. This one, it builds into an appropriate crescendo right at the film, so it's more of a normal upswing in story. It doesn't go up and down like The Hateful Eight, but it's more like The Hateful Eight in structure than any of the others.
Wow. All right, good to know. I'm still, I'd say it's very probable I will not get to see it in theater, because life. Literally, I think I cashed in one of my most recent film viewing experience when I went and saw Midsommar with my buddy Kyle. And yeah, it's, by the way, that is, I know you don't like scary movies, so you would not like it. but anyway, I think we've even talked about that before. So yeah, it's probably going to be a while before I say anything. So good to know. Now I'm prepared for the unexpected, which is good, because I was going to expect what I've already seen from him repeatedly. So I'm glad I'm not. That's cool. So let's move on to actual Everton things, because someone just told me in my ear just now that this is actually an Everton podcast. So just to sum up what's happening this particular podcast, it is just me and Terry on this one. Everyone else has prior engagements, so many social engagements, so little time.
Everyone else gonna... young.
Yeah, they are. They are.
And the outplacement of the show.
But we are going to start with the Watford Extra Time show. Talk a little bit about a little bit more detail. I know we've already done a reaction for this particular for the channel. If you check out the YouTube channel, you can see that reaction. But this will be a little bit longer, a little bit more in depth. Then we'll do something a little new called the Middle Bit, and it happens in the middle. And it's a question pulled from Twitter that Terry and I will acknowledge, give a little attention to, and we'll say who it's from. Then we're going to talk about formation. Could Everton possibly benefit from a formation shift to 4-3-3? Question mark. Something else? Question mark. Let's talk about it. All right. And then we'll finish up with a lightning round. Terry's been foaming at the mouth for a lightning round, so we're gonna make that happen. I just hope I can live up to what he's expecting. I feel like I may have to start putting more questions on these, because I feel like they're over so quickly. Lightning. Isn't that crazy? That's not a misnomer. All right, so let's get started. Watford Extra Time show. 1-0 win. Everton brings home all 3 points. That's nice. One of those games, Terry, that I got to be honest, in the past, I feel like we blow that. I feel like we find a way to draw there, or we find a way to just collapse. Not a perfect display from Everton on Saturday, but I got to be honest, I like a little non-wavering, you know what I mean? I like a little bit of sticking fast and finding a way to win. What are your opening thoughts on the Watford match on Saturday?
I mean, 3 points more than anything.
Yeah.
It's 3 points. It reminded me a lot of the games that, you know, in the middle bit of last season where we were terrible and we were losing a lot of games. It reminded me of one of those games, only this time we had a good defence, where in the middle chunk of last season, the defence was really, really poor and, you know, conceding from set pieces. And if we play that game at that time last season, then we'd lose it rather than win. Whereas this time, we got the goal, and the only part of the team I'm really, you know, confident about, in the sense of they've hit the ground running for the season, is the back five. You know, like the four defenders and the goalkeeper. Like, the other players all across the pitch, for you know, varying reasons, seem to be getting into the season at different speeds, and some of them seem to be fitter than others, and some of them seem to be clicking a little bit more, with the players around them. Some of them, obviously can't help that, because they've been in international tournaments, so they're new to the club and all that. But the back four and the goalkeeper, straight away, they've got into it. They've carried on the form that we saw in the run of games at the end of last season, where we were really good. Those five individuals have carried that form into this season. And this is when you want to, it's so important that when you're not playing well and you're bedding in and you're looking to settle things down before the international break, when traditionally when everyone comes back from the first international break, that's when the season really gets going. This early section before that, you want to be taking as many points as you can, because it stands you in good stead for when everyone else gets their act together, because we're going to need, to be taking points off these type of teams if we're going to improve on last season.
So, Terry, in the past, you've been really down on Yerry Mina. Are you eating a little humble pie on this one now?
Yeah. I mean, Michael Keane, Yerry Mina. I never get any of the backs right, do I?
I hope these people who are watching and listening for the first time, they're like, why didn't he like Yerry Mina? Yeah, well, he loves them. And he's one of the people who was actually, to be fair, I wasn't naysaying Yerimina at any point. I was just worried about his fitness, period. It's always been my big knock on Yerimina, stay healthy. And to be fair, he still hasn't done that yet. But the thing that a lot of people's big knock on Yerimina for them was more, it gives him a heart attack when he's got the ball in possession in the back. That has been totally unfounded so far this season. He looks composed. He looks really good, like man-to-man defending. Like, I didn't realize his mobility was that good, being able to kind of, lock down defenders like that. You knew he was great at clearances because he's like 8 feet tall and he's got like a 4 foot vertical leap. So of course he should be able to clear the damn ball out, right? But he's just a really smart defender. The way he crowds somebody with the attacker with the ball enough, if their back's to him, to not foul them. He crowds them to make them uncomfortable and kind of gets up on them, but he does not actually foul them. He's smart, and the guy is snide. I love his snide, getting all up in was it Jerry's face for diving too easily.
My brother-in-law actually texted me after the game, going, "I love Yerimina. He must have 99 aggression stat on FIFA because he's just squaring up to everyone." Mina's starting to show now why the club bought him and why they chased him all last summer and spent a decent amount of money on him. He's got all the tools physically. He's a good defender. Obviously, he still hasn't put a run of games together. There's still always that lurking sort of worry that he could, get injured. Plus, what I hope we don't do is what we do to sometimes some players, build them up too much while things are going well, because he will have a bad game. He's at some point he's going to give a goal away or a penalty or something, because he's a very, very. Rash, some would say, defender. He's very, takes chances, which, so far have been coming off for him. But he's always got that bit of moments of madness in him that will creep up at some point. But it's just something we're gonna have to learn as fans in general, not just for Mina, that you can't, if you're gonna have a young team, which we are, you're gonna have to expect, learning situations with them. They're gonna have inconsistencies. They're gonna have issues. But right now, Mina, Keane, Luca Dean, Coleman and Pickford, all of them have just been fantastic. They've been absolutely solid because, the Crystal Palace and Watford aren't, free scoring super teams, but they've had, very, physical strikers up against them. They've had to deal with Troy Deeney, Christian Benteke. These are, players who are going to, go to war with them, and it's suited the two centre-backs down to the ground. And we may see a little bit different when they come up against like smaller, quicker centre-forwards who try and play a different game with them. We might see them struggle a little bit against them. But right now, can't knock them. They've been, Yerimina's had two man-of-the-match performances for me.
Yeah. Mina's getting all the attention. Michael Keane has quietly been going out about his business, which is awesome. He's just kind of picked up where last season left off. Looks very solid. Looks good in a partnership with Mina, although I feel like there's aspects which make them very similar. Seamus Coleman has been doing all right. He's been steady. Can't say he's creating as many opportunities as Luca Dean is, but he's getting forward some. He's defending well on the flank. He's doing all right. Luca Dean's injury is one of the worst things to come from the match, and us having to throw in Holgate late to go in on the right and Coleman and shift over to the left because Baines was not on the bench that day. We still survived. Still survived. Still, kept the butt cheeks together. managed to kind of make sure it was all right. It was nice. But that's the big problem, and with a hamstring injury, you don't really anticipate him playing the next game. So Leighton Baines probably will come back in, and Coleman swing back over to the right.
I think Baines is injured at the minute. I'm not sure how long for, but he's that's why he wasn't on the bench. He's not available at the minute, Baines. No.
Somebody, I just saw a story today where he's supposed to come in and play for him. So I don't know. Is he still injured or?
I don't know about still, but he was at the weekend. I mean, hopefully he's back for this game. But I think Silva said though that, I mean, it's sad if it's got to this, but that Fabian Delph will be fit for this next.
Oh yeah.
So in a pinch, he could go in at left back or a header, because I would rather see that than. That's Coleman at left back and Holgate at right back. If both the left backs,
yeah, Fabian Delph at left back is not the worst thing in the world. We were talking about it when we were doing our squad depth analysis. I had forgotten that is a possibility, and then it hit me. I'm like, oh yeah, he played a lot for the friggin' league champions last season at that same position. Not the worst case in the world. So that may be possible, man. You may be right.
I mean, I think if either of the two left backs can play, I think they will. Even if they just pass a fitness test on the day, the same way that Gomez did. But there's always, you know, Delph to make his debut, because it's not it is a auxiliary sort of left back, but you know it could be a lot worse. He can't play there. We'll put him there. He played there once. No, he's played there a lot. He played there at a high level. So I wouldn't be. Wouldn't like it, but I wouldn't be worried if we started with Delph at left back against Aston Villa.
Right on. Besides the, you know, Pickford and the back line, anybody else you feel stood out? Because I mean, I feel like you go man of the match, immediately you jump to the keeper in the back line because they were so sound. There was a miscommunication here or there, but not that many. Did all right for the most part. But the fact that we struggled to put together some opportunities, or put together just in many opportunities at all, kind of makes you a little wary as far as chances, creating chances down the line. Anybody you felt like performed well out of those, or was it mainly you're thinking more about the ones who struggled?
I think Andre Gomez played well, considering he probably wasn't completely fit. I mean, it's so apparent now compared to when he went off against Crystal Palace. So when he was on the pitch for Crystal Palace and when he was on the pitch for Watford, against Watford, compared to the spell that he wasn't on the pitch, he is the heart of the team. Like, he is so important. Like, he's the player that they all give the ball to. He's the engine of the team. The whole system relies on him because of his range of passing, and you know he's the ball to take the pressure off when the defence have got it. He's the player the other players in attack look to if they, you know, they run down a blind alley, they turn, they look, where's Gomez, we'll give it to him, and he'll recycle the ball to another better attacking position. If I could wrap him in cotton wool between every game, I would, because he's so important to every play. So I think he played well. Seen him play better, but obviously you got to factor in the fact that he wasn't completely fit, because he'd only just made the game.
Mm-hmm. As far as struggling, my immediate jump is to Richarlison not really having. I just felt like he gave the ball away very cheaply and often. You see that sometimes with Richarlison. You see it with Sigurdsson lately too. Kind of trying to take chances on quick passes, and it's just like, you know, foot off here or there, and it allows the defender to get a hold of it, and it's just basically saying, "Here, guys, have the ball." Sigurdsson's done it a lot the first two matches. Richarlison definitely did it this game a lot. So if I'm thinking of someone who just didn't have their best game, Richarlison, he also had a couple of gilt-edged chances with his noggin, and it, you know, put it over, got under both times, you know? So, especially the last one. Mm. The last one, I mean, I'm not saying I would have made it. I'm just saying if I think I could have made it, maybe, there's a problem, because he is 11 million times better than I am. So yeah, if I'm thinking, you know, I might have been able to nail that, no, that's a problem. All right, and it's possible, you know, playing against his old team. I think he just had an off day, and that's it's as easy as that. You know, we put in Walcott for him, which I know everybody was like, okay, you know, we're like, yeah, we want him out, but Walcott sometimes he scores, and Walcott did all right. He did all right.
Well,
You know, it didn't really dazzle, but he did all right.
Richarlison and Iwobi have both been on international tournaments in the summer and come back to pre-season really late. In fact, haven't had a pre-season. So we're going to see Walcott, especially in these early weeks, because he's the one who's the most match fit. He's had a full pre-season. So, you know, he's never going to throw Iwobi in ahead of Walcott at this point because, you know, Iwobi won't be ready and Richarlison clearly isn't completely ready. But they'll get there. They're basically... You know, as a lot of players do now, international players at least, they're having their pre-season now. They're sort of their pre-season friendly games, which all of the other players had to build up fitness. They're doing it in Premier League games, and there's just no way around it. The only only thing you can take from it is it's not just us. Everyone's got it, but you'll see other clubs who've got players who are away on international tournaments, especially ones who went to the final or you know, won it or whatever, like Richarlison did. Like that Nicolas Pepe, I think he's only come on as a substitute for Arsenal so far. And I think he came back to training earlier than Richarlison did. Don't quote me on that, but if it's not earlier, it's around the same time. So we haven't obviously got we don't feel like we have the luxury of bringing Richarlison off the bench every game. But I think in an ideal world, if we had everyone else fit, we would be doing that.
Terry, you're so fair. You're so fair. It's like, yeah, Jerry... Richarlison looked like shit, but you know what? He's a human. He's a human being, says Terry. He's a man. He's right. He hasn't had much of a preseason. I'm just pointing out he looked a little meh, all right? Because I expect, you know, Richarlison, man. I want pigeon dancing. Bring me my Richarlison, the normal one. He'll be back soon enough. I'm not worried about it. It's just one of those things. That's the brilliance of having depth, you know? I do think, I thought we may have seen Iwobi late. Had we not had to make that sub for Dean going out and bringing Holgate in. I thought maybe we would have seen Iwobi coming in for Sigurdsson the last, like, 5 minutes. Something like that. Just to get him, you know, get him involved, you know?
Yeah.
Let him know, hey, you're part of things. You're part of the plan. That's what I expected. I was so excited for it, too. Just the idea of being able to have another option at that position off the bench. I've been waiting for it for a long time. And then it just got. I was waiting the whole time, and then pfft, went away. Luka Dean tweaks his hammy. Not cool. So not a dominant performance for us. I think some people watch that game and they actually would say that it probably would have been more fair had the result been a draw. I don't care. I do not care. The opposition manager can say they deserved the win as much as they want. That's fine. At the end of the day, our defense held, and our keeper made a save with his face. With his face.
Yeah.
That's nice. I like that.
It's a shame, really, because he's so good-looking, isn't he? So it's ruined it.
He's fine. Yeah, remember, he's normally in, like, dance halls with the strobe lights, so it doesn't really matter what people are looking like there. He's busy getting the rave on.
Yeah, exactly.
He doesn't care. Oh, yeah, and he's another one who's getting super snide, and I love it. I love him getting onto these guys. Flop Pereira, I think he got into him and Mina both got on Pereira, and I was like, good.
Yeah.
He flops there, and he pretends like he's all hurt, and then we get on him, and then Pereira jumps up and starts arguing with him. I'm like, yeah, why are you laying down?
we missed that for so long. Just the you know, excuse the language, the bastards in the team, the ones who, you know, who want to fight everyone no matter what. Like we had that in spades under Moyes, and we lost it for a long time. But I think now we've got it back because you see in pre-season everything. Even Andre Gomez, he likes to get involved and love all that.
Yeah.
I love players who fight for each other and, you know, fight for the badge. Forget.
Agreed.
How you play, just who want to stick up for each other and want to get involved with the other team. Love all that. Evertonians buy right into that, especially at Goodison.
Yeah, and that's something I've been looking for a while. I'm so excited to see that. Oh my gosh. Just a little, I don't know. I feel like it's a little chauvinistic to say having some cojones, you know what I mean? Because, you know, women can be brave about that kind of stuff too, but that's what people have said in the past. That's, you know, I think it's really, snide is a good way to say it though. snide is a good way to say it.
The figurative cojones, not literal.
Yes, yes. It's yeah, gotta be. This was not a ton of action during the match. I will say this is the first match in my recent memory where one of my sons sat beside me the entire match, watched the entire thing from whistle to whistle, the full 90. Bennett was sat down beside me watching the whole thing, and it was great. So great. I was like, finally, all this brainwashing is starting to pay off. Fantastic. Now I can actually celebrate with someone when we score, you know, and I'm not just yelling and everybody turns around in the house like, you know, like what is wrong with you? You know, now it's somebody else too. It's great. So yeah, it's nice. Last bit, we need to address, the play of Gabamin, Jabaman, Bama, whatever, JPEG. We need to address the play of JPEG and Moise Keane. Mm-hmm. How do we feel? I came out of that a lot more optimistic about those two gents. I don't know about you.
Yeah, Gabamin looked a lot better. I mean, still ways to go. There was points where, you know, he was still adjusting, but he clearly had got the memo about go faster, release the ball faster. But he didn't have much of an understanding with Gomez, but it's, you know, it's the first game together, they're gonna have to, you know, develop that. Improved. I was absolutely gutted for Moise Keane not getting one of those two goals. I mean, the first one he's a bit too excited. He lets loose when he could carry her a lot further. You know, a little bit of lack of composure, but that second one where he does the little turn on the edge of the box, and it's
like this far off. I thought he was off. I thought he was offside. I was like, oh, it's not going to count anyway, whatever. So I didn't even pay attention to the fact that it was just bare. And then I was like, wait, they didn't raise the. Are you kidding? You know, it's like, then I started really getting gutted for him. Well, I felt really bad for him there.
You can see from that move, though, that he's, and this is not a knock on Calvert-Lewin, but he's going to be more of a goal scorer than Calvert-Lewin straight away, because. Could you imagine Calvert-Lewin getting himself that little bit of space to get that shot away? Calvert-Lewin would have shielded the ball and fed someone else in, because that's the type of player he is. Whereas Keane was like, no, I'm going to turn this player, I'm going to make this bit of space for myself, and I'm going to smash it at goal. Just unlucky it didn't go in. So
yeah,
I think, and I think the manager's alluded to this as well, because of the way Keane was at Juventus, he's not going to suddenly, you know, change, and he's going to be a start every game every week. 90-minute player, that's going to have to come gradually. I think we're going to see a lot of them introduced off the bench and into, you know, mm-hmm. tired defenders and try and, you know, get a feel for the league that way. But I think we're going to see some goals out of him, because he looks like he wants to score. He looks like he's aggressive in the box and, you know, around the box. And I'm just so gutted he never scored that second chance, because honestly, a few inches to the right and it's in.
Credit to Calvert-Lewin, though. First half, he turned his defender. Ball went across his body. Defender, I don't know if it was a penalty. He did get grabbed. Went down too easily, to be fair. But he had the defender shook, and he was going to crack a left-footed shot right there. It did seem like he was going to turn the defender and crack a left-footed shot. I will say, kind of annoyed that the referee didn't even look at VAR on that, but he looked on the De La Feo one in the second half. I don't even know if Mina made any contact, but there was contact on Calvert-Lewin. Again, for me, probably not either one was a pen. Whatever. But just saying, look. That's what agitates me about this new VAR thing. It's like they're finding new ways for it to look bullshit, and I don't like that. You know, I realize new handball rule is really making, it's crap. I got it. But there's just certain times, I feel like when I watch Bundesliga, I feel like they just have VAR so, they got it figured out, you know? So anyway, so anything else on for this particular match?
No, not really. Good 3 points. Hope we do it again and again and again until the team clicks, and then we'll start to expect 3 points rather than just hope, ideally.
Yes. Bernard got a goal. Bernard got a goal.
Yeah.
Unexpected. And we love it. Bring it on, Bernard. More of that. All right. All right, everybody. This is the middle bit. Toffee Blues John, he is the mastermind behind the Toffee Blues fan account, webpage, pretty much everything. He's like, I don't know. He's like that computer in 2001, A Space Odyssey. Hal is John, except John's a real dude. He did put out a question into the Twitterverse asking for some questions that people could maybe contribute, and we'll answer. And he pulled one for us to discuss, and that's what we're handling on the middle bit today. This comes from James Warland. Do you know James, Terry?
Do I? I think I do. No.
I don't know. Well, I'm just asking.
Yeah, well, that you make me look silly now, Jerry, because if I say no, it's really look like I'm so famous that I don't know him. And I don't think I do.
You might. Probably. I feel like a lot of the Everton supporters are all like, oh yeah, I know that person, at least from Twitter. Yeah,
quite a big deal, so a lot of people tweet me, so
I like that. It's very, very anchor man.
Yeah, I think I know. He's tweeted me before, yeah.
So this is from James Warland. James asks, should they show the VAR feed on the screens at the ground so people who are at the game have a clue what's going on? What do you think?
Sweet, letting a motorbike go past my house. I think that's a no-brainer. I can't understand why that hasn't been done anyway. I mean, there's two grounds in the Premier League that can't have it, which is Anfield and Old Trafford. I mean, don't ask me why. I mean, I know why they haven't got a big screen, but why haven't they got a big screen? They're like the two of the biggest clubs in the league, if not the two biggest clubs, but whatever. Yeah, I mean, I'm not against VAR as a concept in general. I'd rather have the right decision, but I think the problems it's running into now are twofold. Obviously, the change of rules that they've implemented to go with it. I think VAR was perfect for the old rules. Changing it has actually made it worse. But the stadium experience is where it's really suffering. Like, that's what, you know, people in the ground, and obviously where it's becoming spoken about is journalists in the ground are, you know, relaying this this experience that you don't really know what's going on. You feel sort of second guess yourself if you celebrate a goal, because you feel like a few seconds later there's going to be VAR check. We'll get used to that, but I think we need to see on the screen, if possible, what they're checking. It won't change anything, but the crowd will feel more involved and understand, because currently, if you're watching on a stream or at home on TV, you're more in the loop than someone who's in the ground, and that never used to be the way. I remember I'd come out of a match, and someone who would only have watched it on television, they'd tell me something like, "Oh yeah, that for that penalty shout that wasn't given, yeah, it wasn't a penalty, but you thought it was in the ground." But then I would say, oh, there was something that went on in a corner, and it was a running battle, and like these two players were in each other all game. There was a different sort of knowledge base you could take from actually attending the match compared to watching it on TV. And VAR in its current form, without seeing it on the screen, has took a lot away from the stadium going supporter. So I think that if that can be done, and it's not it's not a problem too. It's a very, very, you know, inexpensive, easy, you know, fix to sort of smooth over some of the issues that the, you know, the on the day supporters are having with VAR that's taking their enjoyment out of it.
Yeah, I was really excited about VAR. I was really excited about it because I was just, again, I've been aspiring to have it function the way the Bundesliga does. I don't know why. I just feel like they got it figured out. You know, is there a motion that the referee, that the official actually makes to kind of indicate that there is? Do they make that motion in Premier League to kind of tell everyone, hey, we're reviewing that right now?
Yeah, I think so. I think they do the sort of square with their fingers. Like,
Do that in Premier League the way they do in every other league?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Because I was trying to remember them actually doing that.
Yeah.
I feel like I saw him going like this, just kind of pointing to his earpiece, like, hey.
I think
that's the only thing I remember.
I don't think it's regulation. I think they, you know, they do the square thing to indicate to the supporters and to the rest of the players that they're currently reviewing it. But one thing they don't do is they don't run over to the screen now, do they? Because that's just like, that's not needed. It's just a piece of theatre to show the crowd that's what it's a reviewed decision, when really you can just be told in his ear quickly by, you know, the fifth official or whatever you call it, that we're reviewing the incident. I mean, VAR, I'm very, very pro VAR. I want the right decisions. I don't want it anymore where certain clubs get preferential treatment or get the benefit of the doubt, because VAR, for whatever fault it's got, will eradicate that, because there's no way of saying it was an error now. If the problem I've got is the
question about that. Yeah. Question about that. Okay. Did you see the Pogba decision?
I didn't. Didn't see it.
Okay, well, I'm getting agitated because I'm worried we're running into the same thing where they're reviewing it, but you're still seeing flops get called as penalties, you know, and it just happened to be United. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm worried about. I don't want that feeling where I feel like certain teams are getting preferential treatment still. That's what I'm worried about. Now, I'm not going to assume anything. I'm going to wait. Mm-hmm. But what you were just describing, I'm worried it's going to continue the same thing. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's imperfect, but I think a lot of the club favoritism will stop, because you won't be able to justify it now. Like, oh, well, I didn't see, you know, like, do you remember Cardiff last year had goals ruled out for it? Was it goals ruled out, or they conceded goals that were wrong? But it was the famous image of Neil Warnock with his hands on his head. They basically got screwed out of a game with Chelsea. It's like, yeah, that doesn't happen the other way around. No way. No way did Chelsea get screwed by officials and lose.
No way.
I want VAR to eradicate that at any cost, because it has gone on for years where certain players and certain clubs and certain managers have influence over officials. Now, what I don't like about this version of VAR we've got is the certain incidents that they will review, but then similar incidents they won't. And it's weird things like that stupid handball thing. If that leads to a goal, you review it. If it does, you know what I mean? It's sort of picking and choosing when it's reviewed. I want it to be consistent across everything. Like, the handball one, which everyone's going nuts about, doesn't bother me as much as that offside one for Sterling, for example. It's like, I think that offside rule needs to be changed in light of VAR, because technically it is correct, but it's such a, his armpit is like a millimetre offside. It's like, that's not VAR, that's the offside rule. I would prefer it personally to go back to daylight, since we can now examine with you know, technology, the offsides. I think the actual daylight between the players, old way of doing offsides, should be put into effect, because the very first high profile example of an offside call, it was just ridiculous. It was like, he's, you know, for everyone with eyes, he's onside, but slight part of his shoulder was just ahead of the opposition player. Like, you can't call that offside for me. It's just, he's not offside. He's in line with the player, but, like, you know, one of his chest hairs has gone offside.
Oh, yeah, and where are you starting? Where are you starting his armpit? Where are you starting the shoulder? Are you measuring from, you know what I mean? Like, where do you actually start?
I think I think the old, if there's daylight between the players, then, you know, that can count as it, because there's no daylight between the two of them. They're perfectly in line with each other. But a goal-scoring, air quotes, part of the body is ahead, so he can score with his shoulder. So he's got, like, a fraction of his shoulder is offside. Like, that's a ridiculous.
I mean, you know how many handballs that I've seen called in the middle of the field when the ball hits their shoulder, but they deemed it, like, to be too far down on the show. You know what I mean? So that's, but this, what we're talking about is a difficult rule. Handballs have been difficult to call for a long time. You know what I mean? This whole new thing. I mean, we had my kid had a 3v3 tournament, and a player prevented a goal by making his silhouette bigger, and the ball hit him here. Right? And referee called nothing. And I was like, I was like, and I actually told him, I was like, you know, there's a new rule, right? I was like, he made his silhouette bigger, you know, and the referee just had no clue because he wasn't up to date. And frankly, in any world, if you're making yourself bigger, that's supposed to be a handball, you know?
I think there was one in the Arsenal game as well where the Burnley player is desperately trying to get his arm out the way, but it hits his arm anyway, and then they score off the resulting free kick that it gets given for. It's like, how can that be classed as handball? He's smashed it, you know, attempting to cross. The Burnley player has swung his arm away from the ball to try and get it, but he's obviously not as fast as the travelling ball. It hits his arm, changes direction. That's classed as handball. It's like, well, how? Because he's tried to move his arm out the way and just couldn't do it. So the rules that they've implemented to coincide with VAR are the ones that are causing the most trouble, I think. I think if they just left the old rules from last season and maybe tweak one or two, like the offside for daylight and whatnot, that's my personal view, then it'd be a lot smoother. I think they've tried to do too much too quickly, but VAR itself, I'm glad it's here. I don't want it to go away. It's not going to go away, so I don't know why people are kicking and screaming. I would rather sacrifice a little bit to get the right calls, because there's a lot of reasons, and too often, you know, they can deny it all they want. The officials, the clubs themselves, certain clubs get preferential treatment. I'm sure Everton have had preferential treatment over other smaller clubs as well. I don't want that. I want a fair sport. I don't want a sport of this elite level to be, you know, open to, you know, foul play, corruption, anything like that, when the technology is there and used elsewhere to rule that out for the most part.
Unless we're playing Millwall, Terry, and then they just get to score with their hands whenever they want.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry. That just made me nauseous again when I thought about it. I had to share my nausea. All right, so the question here was James's question. Should they show the VAR feed on the screens at the ground so that the fans have a clue of what's going on? Terry says yes. I'm of a mind that if you can, yes. You know what I mean? I feel like they do something very similar to that here in the States for NFL. That was like the first place I saw video review being used. And they do it a different way. They give coaches challenges if there's a couple, and that way it doesn't completely slow the game to a crawl. They give the coaches two challenges per half. I think it's per half. And they throw that challenge flag out there, and then, you know, so if it's a huge, crazy important moment, they have to review it, you know? I don't really know that we're heading that direction.
I'd hate.
But it's tough. But the thing is, if you get it to where you're, I don't know. I know watch the Mexican Liga all the time, and they have not mastered it yet. I know last season it was so slow. It would slow games down to a crawl. They would add 9 minutes of added time frequently. It's ridiculous. So it's just a matter. It takes a long time to perfect VAR. It just really does. I'm with you, dude. I'm all for it. I'm all for VAR. I was sick to death of seeing people like Martial get away with that flop last season to basically give them a win over us. That sucked. All right? Mm-hmm. Now, would VAR have pulled that back? Well, it should have. We'll see. I don't know. All right, so James, I think me and Terry are saying yeah. You know, I do think it would be more fair if every stadium had the capability to be able to do that in the league. You know what I mean? Like, it should be there for everybody. But whatever. All right. Well, that's it with the middle bit. Come on back. We're going to talk formations here in just a moment. Listen to some transition music now. We need to talk formation as people, as they do, as is their want. That's my Matt Berry. People have been talking. They notice how completely uninspiring Everton is on the attacking end, and they're thinking, maybe we should start thinking about a formation shift. All right? We're just not having as many chances. It's really tough. Maybe we need to rethink what we're doing here. Silva has been rocking the 4-2-3-1 ever since last season. Every once in a while, he'll tweak it a bit, whatever. But everybody knows, I mean, everybody knows, that Silva's preferred formation is a 4-3-3. The thinking is that when we made a bid for Decore, that would give him the ability to be able to make a change like that and go to that formation when needed and to pull Sigurdsson out, put Decore in, you know, in certain matches, and maybe even moving forward. Mm-hmm. So, Terry, number one, do you feel like a formational shift would benefit Everton moving forward? Number two, do you feel like we have the personnel to do something like that at the moment?
Well, that's the key question. It wouldn't benefit us at the minute because we haven't got the personnel. I think a lot of supporters are stuck in this mode where we have an 11 set, 11 players, and they're the players who play, and you know, one or two come on as a substitute. If we'd have got to Corey, we probably would have seen 4-3-3 a lot more with a different sort of, formula in midfield. And that doesn't mean, oh, well, now you've got to sell Sigurdsson. No, a lot of clubs have got a lot, multiple good players and can change the system up. Arsenal at the minute are playing a system and Ozil isn't in there. But if Ozil comes back in, they'll just change system. Liverpool play, obviously, a 4-3-3. But every now and then they'll go 4-2-3-1 and put Shaqiri in there, and Salah goes up front and Firmino goes behind the striker and what have you. That's what I think we're going to end up getting with when we eventually get another number 8 midfielder, whether it's in January, the summer, whether it's the Corey, someone else, when we move to that, because we will, I think we will, because Silva's preferred style is that. We won't just suddenly abandon Gylfi Sigurdsson and abandon the 4-2-3-1. We'll move to that in some games, and some games Sigurdsson will be on the bench and some games he'll start, and it'll be like that with a lot of players. I think we're going to be like that with Iwobi. He's not going to be a bench player or a starter. He's going to be either. And, eventually Silva wants all the players to be like that.
Competition for places. The idea of no one is safe, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think we will switch to 4-3-3. We'll see it at some point this season, because we have got the players to do it sometimes. Not across a whole season, because you basically need a middle three of Gbamon or Schneiderlin, but Gbamon, Delph, and Andre Gomez, maybe Tom Davies. But drop Sigurdsson, put one of the centre midfielders in there. But obviously, Tom Davies, it's a long conversation whether he's good enough, to play consistently in a long spell of games. Fabian Delph is good enough, but he's older. He gets a lot of injuries. I think we would have seen Gbamon, Gomez and Decore a lot more if we'd have signed them, and we'd have seen Sigurdsson sort of move into that role where, he plays some games from the start, comes off the bench others, depends on the opposition. One thing I will say is, before, just to back up my, certainty about us going to the 4-3-3, is that Silva has always wanted this, traditional number 6 who sits deep. He said he never had that in Garnagay because he was obviously more combative, he was more energetic, he was the Kante type position where he'd press everyone in a 4-2-3-1, but he never sat between the two centre backs. And the reason I'm so sure we're going to switch to that is because before matches, we always last season did a drill where the back four on the pitch would all stand in a line, the back four line, and they'd pass between each other. So, Coleman had passed to Keane, and Keane had passed to Zouma, or now Mina, and then Mina had passed to Luca Dean, and then back across. And they'd practice passing amongst each other as a back four. Whereas against Watford, Gbamon was in the middle of it. So you had Gbamon with the two centre-backs either side of him, and the full-backs push wider. So I think that is eventually what he wants to do. But to do that, you can't have Sigurdsson as well, because the centre midfielders will just play in a narrow line, because Sigurdsson will not sit deep with Gomez. He might be able to, but he hasn't done it so far while he's been at Everton. He's always been further up the pitch as sort of a second striker. And if Gbamon's
second striker,
if Gbamon's going to sit that deep, Gomez needs someone else alongside him, whether that was would have been Decore or whether it'll be Delph. But if you do that with the two centre midfielders with the sitter, then your front three can stay much higher up the pitch. So they'll get more support for the likes of Calvert-Lewin, you'll get more chances on goal. That will suit Richarlison especially because he won't be starting so far back. Bernard, for example, Iwobi, they'll all benefit from starting really high up the pitch, because which a 4-3-3 allows them to do. A 4-2-3-1, the one who stays higher up the pitch with the main front striker is Sigurdsson. So I think we will switch on to that because now he's got this number six in Gbamon, but obviously he's not going to rush into that because the player still needs to bed in himself. But second half of this season, definitely next season, when we get another transfer window, I think 4-3-3 will be the long-term formation, and Sigurdsson will just sort of either he'll ask to leave because he wants to start every game. I can't see that, or he'll be one of those. We'll have that luxury like other big clubs do, where they've got quality players who don't start every game because of other quality players. It's something we're not used to. We're used to having 11 players. 11 to 13 players, like they're our players, and the rest just sort of fill spaces on the bench, and we hope no one gets injured. Ideally, you want to be at the point where, no, you could change it around, you could change formation for a game, you could change the composition of, the midfield, the forward line. The top clubs do it. Man City are perfect at it, like, not to compare ourselves with them. They can play any combination and, change it up. Liverpool try to do it, but obviously there's such a drop off in their quality level compared to, if they change it round, they've got to bring in Shaqiri, who is a good player, but he's not a patch on their usual forward players and so on. Like, that's what I think he wants to do. He wants to phase Sigurdsson into a different role and have the option to play his preferred 4-3-3. He's finally got his player to play there as a number six. He just needs another number eight to go in alongside Gomez. Delph can do it, whether he will or not. Over a whole season, I don't know. I think we'll see it at spells, though.
Yeah, I know. Silva, when he was at Watford, the way he used to run is he would have, and this is, I'm just reminding people of this. I'm sure a lot of people already know this. This has been well documented, I'm sure. Capoue, Doucouré, and then one of either Hughes or Tom Cleverley playing that third role. Now, I find that interesting that we are talking about Doucouré. If he were in playing more of the Hughes Cleverley role rather than the role he played with Silva at Watford, which is interesting. I think that just depends on personnel. The fact that we have more personnel to play these other two positions compared to that third position, but that's the thing. Sigurdsson, I don't think, when I think about what Gylfi can do, and his work rate and everything, his work rate and his athleticism and everything is very similar to what Hughes and Cleverley can do. You know what I mean? He's just a better finisher. Period. He's about equally as good of a passer, right? And if you watch him defensively, how hard he works defensively, he does a lot of work. The guy runs. He covers a lot of ground. So can he do that role that Silva had, that other role? Yeah, he could. But I think people are really into the idea of having a more athletic, quicker player that can press the ball up forward a lot quicker and create more opportunities in that third role if we do 4-3-3. That's what people are really fixating on. That's why we think, okay, Decore is gonna would have been our guy, because he is athletic. He pushes the ball forward. He does create more chances. From open play. It's fascinating trying to take a look at who we have now and how that would work and how that would function. I do think Delph would work in that particular three, if we were to do that. Delph in that in one of those more offensive attacking roles compared to sitting deep. I think as far as sitting deep players, right now we only really have Gbamin and Schneiderlin, the ones who sit back, unless you want to start really talking about depth. You know what I mean? Going really deep into our squad.
Well,
But
Silva was at pains to stress, wasn't he, that when Delph came in, he wasn't coming in to replace Idrissa Gueye.
And remember, we didn't believe, or you didn't believe him.
Yeah, I didn't, but it's...
Terry's a naysayer.
It's more or less because now you can see that he's, no, because I'm going to buy a number six and I need another box-to-box type, you know, I need two Gomez's, I need, you know,
yes.
I need players of that ilk, because I'm not going to play with an Idrissa Gueye. Now, that was... Mm. Basically what he was saying, like, yeah, he's not going to replace him because I'm not going to have that player anymore. I'm going to have a sitting number six, so basically a better Schneiderlin. He's back in Schneiderlin at the minute because he knows that Kabamin is new to the league and he'll need cover and he'll need competition, but I think, you know, Schneiderlin's not going to be starting if Kabamin, you know, takes to the Premier League, as we hope he does. Yeah, it's the way Silvers wants to play for a long time. He said in his first press conference, I want to play, you know, 4-3-3 is my position, but he's never really had the personnel, and you couldn't have a player like Idrissa Gueye and not play him. He was too, you know.
You have to play him. Yeah, that was the big thing, is having this awesome player, right, who doesn't really fit. That we talked about that a few times last year, you know, I remember that. Yeah, and it's funny when you think about Tom Davies here, because of the Watford personnel we were just talking about, Tom Davies fits in really well with the Hughes Cleverley role. You know what I mean? If you're thinking about those players, he plugs in really well with that. So I'm wondering if we'll see Silva do, and maybe we already have, and we haven't paid close enough attention, go from 4-2-3-1 when we put Davies in for Sigurdsson. Davies, we play more similar to that 4-3-3 style. You know, I've noticed he plays farther back than Sigurdsson does.
Yeah, I think that's probably why he offered him the contract, because he's like, I need a guy for that position for when I want to roll like that, and he doesn't have anyone else. So, you know, lots of different types of midfielders for different options, and that's where he always says it, different options, different solutions.
I do love that.
He wants a lot of players, all good, and some of them are going to miss out. It's what all the better clubs have got. Because we've recycled so many players over the last few years, we've not had that luxury. But if we can get back to that, where we've got a lot of legitimate like starters, and you don't know who's going to start, that'd be, you know, that's
good. That's awesome.
Yeah,
definitely. Okay, we should wrap this up. Terry's recording device is going to die if we do not. I would talk about this more, though. I gotta be honest, I love this topic. I think it's great. I do feel like there is... I'm gonna give it a little time, though. I'm gonna see how Silva manages this, as far as personnel and people getting used to positions and everything, and starting to get more fit. I wanna see how it works, but... So I'm hesitant to say it needs to be happening now, but in a month from now, if we're still not creating much, we gotta think about it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It's time for the lightning round with Terry. We've done lightning round with Terry before, I think, once upon a time, many, many moons ago. But we're going to do it again because, you know, you just can't learn enough about our people, you know? So the way lightning round's going to work is I'm going to ask Terry 20 questions, and he has to answer them as quickly as he can, so to make sure that I'm getting an honest answer. You know, I don't want him thinking about it and sugarcoating it and you know, thinking about the answer that he wants us to hear. Like, you know, what's your favorite movie, Citizen Kane? Oh, he's so insightful. No. I want the real deal, all right? So, here's Lightning Round with Terry. Terry, do you have any questions prior to starting?
No, not at all. Hit me.
All right. So, Terry, we begin. Terry, what's the best sports film?
I don't know. Are there any good ones? I can't think of any good spots. Rocky 1.
That is the right answer. I just want to say that out loud. What's the last book you read?
Last book I read was... it's got a pretty ominous name. It's called Deathfire. It's in a series I read based on the Warhammer 40K universe. It's science fiction prose. So,
science fiction prose.
Very geeky, but I love it.
All right, that's allowed. So, Scarface versus Goodfellas versus Godfather. Who wins?
Goodfellas.
Okay. Terry, in one sentence, convince me to own a cat.
Oh, they're great. They you need to own a cat because you get half, maybe less than half the love of dogs, but less than 5% of the work.
Okay, that's pretty good. What's your favorite non-Everton team?
Barcelona.
Okay. What's something that you like but other people think is gross?
My wife.
Whoa! Oh, ouch!
I couldn't think of anything.
Terry with the old school comedy routine. Very take my wife, please, right there. That's
she doesn't listen to this.
All right, so that's your actual answer. We'll just go through.
I'm really boring. I don't really like anything that's gross and pretty boring like that.
I was expecting something like cottage cheese. All right, cool. All right, so Game of Thrones. Which house or family do you belong to?
Lannister.
Lannister?
Because I'm an asshole. Not because I get up to, you know, things that I shouldn't do with my family.
Okay. So you say. All right. So, going a little more cultural, which visual artist is your favorite?
At the minute, I quite like a guy called Futura. Futura 2000. I think if you Google him, that's what comes up. Basically does a lot of like sort of shapes, basically. He does a lot of like really, really bright, like, you know, bright, colourful, like sort of shape collages. So he's very much into trainers, sneakers and things like that. He's involved in designs and stuff like that, but that's how I came across him, in that sort of way.
Wow, that was not what I was expecting, like Van Gogh or something. I was not expecting that at all. Wow. All right. What's the best comedy show?
Ooh.
All time. Doesn't have to be now.
I've got a personal favorite is Red Dwarf, but the funniest, the best ever. It has to be Only Fools and Horses. It's just got to be.
I have to watch this. Everybody keeps talking about that for years, and I've like never seen any of it. Cool. Okay.
Great.
All right. And by the way, I own all of the Red Dwarf series.
They're a personal
favorite. So many.
I couldn't, yeah, conscience not say.
I've even read like there's a Red Dwarf book or multiple. I've read one of them. I know that a friend let me borrow it. So yeah, love Red Dwarf. What's your dream USA location to live? Like, if you could live anywhere in the United States.
Winston-Salem, North Carolina. So we could go and watch Everton games together and have a beer.
We'd be able to go to the pub. It'd be nice. Yeah.
Where else? I don't want to say New York City or like Manhattan, because that's really cliche. I would like to go somewhere like New Orleans or somewhere like that.
Hey, that's good.
Florida. Well, I quite like the look of Florida. It looks like a nice place, but with crazy people.
You're right. There's a lot of crazy in Florida. a lot of crazy in New Orleans, but a different kind. You know what I mean? So next, Lord of the Rings versus Harry Potter.
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings versus Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones.
Last season.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Last season, notwithstanding.
Okay, Game of Thrones versus Star Wars.
Game of Thrones.
All right. Now we see where Terry sits on that stuff. Terry, what's the best nut?
Jerry Gibson.
See, I had a feeling you were going to tell me a human's name.
The humble salted peanut.
Pick an NFL team for this season. Who's your NFL team this season?
The Patriots.
Oh, God.
Because...
Shouldn't have asked you. Oh, break my heart. They're the worst, Terry.
But they're...
Oh, anyway.
They're also the best, which is why I picked
them. Yes, I know. Oh, my gosh. All right, so, Terry, what's the best film soundtrack?
Ooh. Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm going to have to say it. It used to be Pulp Fiction, but Guardians of the Galaxy, I'm
going to
say.
I was about to whisper to the microphone and say, he's going to pick Tarantino. But no, shocking. All right. There is a lot of good music on there. I'm with you on that. So this one's a little different. Terry, which celebrity would you be okay with if they walked in on you in the bathroom?
Sam Allardyce. Because I want him to smell it.
Wow! Best possible answer. Oh my god. Alright, so following that up, what's your favorite alcoholic drink?
Jack Daniels and Coke. Really boring.
Jack and Coke. Favorite superhero? May have asked you this before.
Oh god. Long term Superman, but I'm not really happy with a lot of his films recently.
I'm agreeing. That's good. I'm with you on that. I grew up watching all the Superman movies, and that was my favorite growing up. Yeah. So yeah,
I loved Superman growing up, but it was like the animated show and the comics and stuff.
The animated show's good. I got my boys still watch that.
Yeah. Even though the films are trash lately, still probably my number one favorite.
Gotcha. So last question. If I move my family somewhere for the sake of, you know, if we're just like, we're done with where we are, we're going to move to another country, where would be the best place for my family, considering the fact that both my boys play football, soccer, whatever you want to call it, and me and my wife need to actually have a job as well, and culturally, you know who I am. What do you think's the place I should move them?
Gonna have to say Liverpool and get involved.
Really?
Yeah, could I, you know, no language barrier. It's a fair bit of media that goes on here, you know, and you know, you could get involved in that. Or if not here, locally in like neighbouring cities, you know, like a lot of production companies and stuff around here. And obviously, you'd be close to Everton and to the Toffee Blues, yeah. Most of us.
Yeah, that would be cool. Okay, I'll look into it.
Yeah, so, sorry if you do that, and I could have said Rome or somewhere like that, but yeah.
I'll look into it. I'm curious. All right, very cool. Well, Terry, that's all the lightning round, man. That's all. I told you. It ends up over, and you're like, I may have to start making more questions for lightning round. All right, so I reckon that's it. The final thing is I'm going to say, Terry, pick a good song to play us out.
I guess that's why they call it The Blues by Elton John. Because Everton were ultimate snides at the weekend and plays highlights of the 1984 FA Cup final where Watford played... not Elton John, they didn't play Elton John. They played Watford and beat them. And we beat them again on the weekend. And Elton John...
You picked an Elton John song. Yeah. And I think they no longer sing the Elton John before their game the way they were trying to get that started. I think they decided not to do that. I think they went back to Zed Cars.
Did they? Right? I thought they made the change and stuck with it. I can't remember which Elton John song it was, but I was quite happy when I heard they were going to relinquish Zed Cars.
Yeah, I saw where somebody else said, you know, that they were happy that the Zed Cars Darby is back, blah blah blah, whatever, and I was like, okay, that means Elton John didn't take. Well, we'll see. I guess we'll see. Regardless, I'm totally with this choice. This is good. I guess that's why they call it The Blues. Elton John. So as we're played out to Elton John, it's time to end another Toffee Blues podcast. We sincerely appreciate you listening. If you're not subscribed, we'd really appreciate it if you would. That way it'll show up on your podcast feed on iTunes, Acast, wherever you, or Spotify, wherever you choose to listen to your pods. If you want more Terry, check him on the Liverpool Echo Fan Jury. I'm sure you can check his Twitter, and he'll tell you when he's going to be, kind of putting out some content on there. Also, everybody, why don't you check out the Toffee Blues website? A lot of Everton content on there. A lot of contributors that show up here on both the YouTube channel and on the podcast. You can check out the stuff there. Also, if you're like, gosh, you know, Terry, I have a lot in common with Terry, I want to see what he looks like, check out the YouTube channel. You can see him in all his glory. And that's really the only reason to check out the YouTube channel. Yes, you can't see it, but he was voguing for you just then. just wanted to mention voguing, really. That's all that was.
Oh, that's cool. So, voguing, if you do that.
Yeah, like dun, 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 dun. Yeah, so it's a shame they're not getting the visuals with this, Derek. So check out the Toffee Blues on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as well. And that's it. We're finished. Hopefully we'll be coming back to you soon. Otherwise, until then, bathe in the 3 points, be happy about it, and starting to get the three when we didn't always use two. It's nice. So, Terry, thanks so much, man. It's good to see you.
Good to see you too, man. Take it easy.
All right. For Terry and myself, we'll talk to you later, everybody. Bye. I guess